Olá a todos e sejam bem-vindos a mais uma edição da Snack Talks. Esta edição vai ser em inglês. Our guest today is Eric Turan. He's currently a world-class software engineer at Google in New York. He has been a tech lead at LearnVest and NBC Universal, has been in the software engineering industry for over 10 years, having experiences with the New York Stock Exchange and several startups. Eric is the guy people go to if they get stuck. He's one of the coolest and most loved engineers, having a very powerful voice through public speaking and mentoring. So welcome, Eric, and thank you for taking the time to join us today. I know you have a busy schedule, so thank you.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here. This is my first podcast, so I'm excited to do probably more of these. I'm super grateful, so thanks, yeah.
Okay, so let's start with some personal questions. So let's start by tackling, why did you choose to work at Google? And is it what you expected it to be?
Yeah, it's funny. You say choose to work at Google, which I think a lot of people choose to work at Google, but it doesn't quite work out. Google is like a very difficult place to end up in. For me, it was a choice I made actually right after my 30th birthday. So I had just turned 30th. I've led teams at multiple large Fortune 50, Fortune 500 companies, and I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with the other 30 years of my life. And I took some time off. I was like, let me take 6-7 months. It turned maybe like a year of time. It was a privileged life. And then in that time off, I realized, man, I've never worked at like Microsoft or Facebook or Google. I should really try to work at one of those. And I realized Google was the ideal place for me. And it worked out. I'll say I got lucky. You know, it was all right. I ended up at Google where I wanted to be. That was pretty much it. Is it everything I thought it would be? I think there's a lot more to Google than people see from the outside. From the inside, you really start seeing that the way the organization is built, it's really meant to scale. So I think it's cool. I like it. I'll probably be here a couple more years. It's not bad.
It's funny that you mentioned scale because Google really is a ginormous company. But how is it to work at a company like Google, so these big companies, versus startups, which you also had the experience. So how is it to work at a big company versus a startup from your point of view?
Yeah, so the funny thing about Google is that they're really good at operating like a startup, which I thought was interesting compared to the other companies I worked at. And the reason why I say that is if you want to, let's say, fix some infrastructure thing as like an engineer on like another large company, you usually have to jump through a lot of hoops. So I remember at NBC, I used to have to go talk to like multiple teams to be like, hey, I want to change the way this thing works. Whereas at Google, no one's really going to stop you. it might just be more complicated than you think it'll be. But you're free to go and like decide that if you want to fix this thing, that's cool. You should still get your work done. But no one's going to be like, no, you should talk to this team or you should talk to this team. You should check with these people. So they've kind of kept that startup spirit where in a lot of startups, you really can just move around and do whatever you want and fix whatever you want. Like if I want to change the infrastructure at a startup, no one's going to stop me, right? Whereas like at the other large companies, you might get some pushback. So I don't know what it is about Google. I think just the culture has been set up that, hey, if someone wants to do something, they're allowed to. And, you know, if they fail, they fail, but at least they try. So I think Google has a pretty good mix between like really large corporation and that startup culture where people can still innovate, which is why I like it. And it lends to the way I like to work. I like to just do things if I want to.
And they have the no blameless policy, which is also really nice.
Yeah. And that really does let people take chances, right? Where, right. You know, at certain companies, if you... You know, there was this saying where it's like no one will ever get fired for choosing like Akamai, right? Like the CDN, like no one's ever going to get fired for choosing like the top CDN that everyone picks, right? But if you decide to take a risk and be like, oh, I'm going to try this little new CDN over here, you might get in trouble, right? Whereas like at Google is no, you know, completely blameless culture. So there's no danger to taking risks.
But can you switch teams easily? Is it easy to switch teams or fields? at
Google, and that's one of the other things that it lets you kind of change what you're working on if you kind of get bored. I'm on my second team already, and I'm on my third year here. So it is, it's, you don't have to go through like the external interview process, or you really just have to meet with someone and say, hey, you know, I think I'll be a good match. And if they have headspace and you, they also think you'll be a good match. Yeah. And your manager doesn't even know, there's no like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble or anything like that. It's truly a culture where if you think you could be better served somewhere else, it's okay to do that. So it is really cool.
There's a lot of networking on the inside, right?
That's fun. And there's so much of that, right? You start realizing, oh, I was using this thing. Oh, I think this is cool. Let me go work on that. And you can work on it without switching teams. But if you want to do that full time, you can. You also have that choice.
Right. And so you said you joined Google about 3 years ago. But can you tell us a bit about your process before Google? So what type of skills did you get? Where did you get them? And for students that are now taking the computer science or related fields, related degrees, so what advices do you have and what should students focus on?
Yeah, that's a great question. So before Google, I would say I came pretty experienced. I had already led multiple teams. I was in the industry for 10, 11 years. I'm starting to realize how long I've been here now. but I learned a lot of skills, I would say, at early in my career. And a lot of that was working at like very small companies before I got to like the really large multi corporation, kind of like the New York Stock Exchange, the NBCs of the world. And the reason for that is at the startups, you just have so many more opportunities. I remember at my first engineering job, it was a company and it was like 7 people. And we would go get clients, and the owner of this company would sell it to them. Like there was a whole team of engineers working on this one project. And it'll be me building like this massive website for, you know, for like an e-commerce or like a luxury jewelry store. And it's like, to them, they're thinking there's like 30 people working on there. It's like, it's me building the whole thing, doing the front end, doing the back end, scaling the database. And in that process, you learn so much because, you know, you don't really know how to scale a database until you've got a million people trying to reach your website and it doesn't work. And there's no one there to help you, right? You're just kind of all alone. And in that process, I still think a lot of stuff I learned on my first job, I'm still using to this day. And it's still been very helpful for me, especially the performance stuff. And it's funny because you don't quite know how good or how, where to like your skill set is until you start working and with a lot more people. And right. I remember when I first worked at my first job, which was right after that, was the stock exchange. I thought I was in over my head, right? I was like, oh man, this is going to be so bad. I've never worked with like, you know, 100 engineers. It's going to be embarrassing.
And like, wasn't it like super stressful?
It was super stressful just because, you know, the New York Stock Exchange and finance and right. New York. But one thing that happened was like within like a month, I was like, oh man, not to be like, no one knows anything, but I was like, oh, I'm pretty good here. Like it's gonna be all right, right? It's like just everyone had, a lot of people had only worked in that environment where it's like a really large team and they only do a small part. And that skill set I had gained of just knowing the full stack and like working on everything was really helpful because whenever we ran into an issue, I was one of the few people that have experienced it before. And I was like, oh, I know how to do this. So I almost always tell students, like, if you can get a job at like a small startup or like a place where you have autonomy to do a lot of that stuff. And I tell people like Google is actually still a pretty good place because that autonomy is still there. Like Google is one of the few places that like it's really large and will let you experiment with different things. I don't want to say it's a startup in a sense, like you also still need to know how to maneuver and do those kind of things. So it's not as easy as if you were to work at a startup where there's just, it's just a wild, wild west, right? It's like, you know, everyone's just trying to like scale their company up. But if you want I think a lot of mistakes people do straight out of school is they try to work at, you know, a big media company or a big finance company, like, you know, I don't want to name any company, but like, you know, the ones people go to that are like, you know, you see on like these Hacker Rank and stuff like that. And those are great, but at those places, you're just kind of going to get pigeonholed into like one role, and you're not going to be able to like learn on the job as much as you want.
Doesn't that happen at Google as well? Like being such a big company, don't you work on a very specific thing at Google as well?
Yeah, and I don't think Google's like great at like preventing that from happening, but they let you, if you want to do something else, they let you, right? Through those other means, like 20% and stuff like that. So they have a way of letting people kind of do other stuff, even though I think when you're just starting, it's a lot harder for you to feel comfortable to do those things. That's why some of the smaller companies are just nicer.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But if people are confident, or sometimes just lack of confidence and they just don't care, it's kind of like, you'll be surprised how much you could get done by just like not caring and be like, oh, I'm gonna work on this stuff over here. A little dangerous at times, but yeah.
That's nice. But so you were talking about people starting out. And I think this is really interesting since you have been working at Google and a lot of other companies. So did you feel imposter syndrome when you joined Google? And how did you cope with it? And as a more general overview, so at what point in your life did you stop feeling imposter syndrome, if you did?
No, yeah. Imposter syndrome is so funny because imposter syndrome wasn't always a vocabulary that I knew, at least, and it definitely wasn't in the tech space, right, when I first started. So I think when I first started, I just felt like a fraud, right? I was like, man, and I was telling you about that experience, right, where it's like, I'm in over my head, right? And then it's like, oh, actually no, it's okay. But it took a long time. I remember I was probably like maybe 7-8 years in as an engineer before I heard the word imposter syndrome, and it was such a relief for me. I was like, oh my god, I could breathe. Like, this is all part of the process, right? It's like it's just like a mental thing. So it's funny, but I still think I kind of got past it for a little bit, and then I think imposter syndrome came back when I joined Google, and I think that was another like stepping stone in my career. And when those things happen, there's like, it's bound to be like, oh, I'm in over my head, it's something new, it's something different. It's Google, you get me? There's a lot of pressure there. And one of the best advice I think I got from someone was, don't think of it as something that like you can overcome and it'll just go away. It's like a wave where it comes and goes, right? And what you're trying to do is realize when like the imposter syndrome hits, you want to be like, wait a minute, like this isn't real. Like you kind of got to cut it and be like, no, I know what I'm doing. It's going to be all right. And it'll just go back down, and then you'll start feeling more like yourself. But another good thing that happened was around maybe a couple of years ago, the idea of like growth mindset really started taking off. Right. And it's the idea that if, you know, you can learn anything, all that's required is like time and effort, essentially. And I think with the knowing about growth mindset, knowing about imposter syndrome, understanding how I learn and where those fears are, I've been able to really almost always stop imposter syndrome before it really starts affecting like my work or whatever project I'm working on. And the way I go about that is really like, I also journal a lot. So I think in the journaling process, I start realizing like, oh wait, what's going on here? Why is this taking so long? Why am I procrastinating? Maybe why am I stressing out? What do I not know that will really help me overcome this?
But that takes a lot of mental strength, right?
You need to have a lot of it. It's just like, you know, you kind of just got to be aware you're in that mindset where it's like, man, what's going on, right? And journaling really helps me. I don't know about other people, but it kind of just gives you awareness into what's happening. And through that process, I've always been able to be like, just break down whatever I'm working on and be like, all right, why do I think I'm not going to be able to get this done? Oh, it's because I don't know this other thing. All right, let's take a moment. Let's learn that well. And then let's come back. Oh, what else am I missing? And it's really kind of, it's almost like the Feynman technique, but it's really just breaking things down and be like, I understand it. Let's move past that. So a little bit of a long answer to be like, it comes and go, man. The trick is to kind of like see it, try to stop it and be like, it's going to be all right. And move on.
But that's a really smart strategy. But since you have the ability to move between teams and between projects at Google, do you think that, say, you are working in a project, then you move to another project, do you think you'll feel it? Like, you move to another project, then all of a sudden everything's new, everyone's new, and they're like, oh man, what have I done?
Yeah, and I think it happens a lot. I mean, at Google, they're pretty good at like recognizing that when you switch teams, there's going to be some time period before you're really performing at your best, right? And they account for that. And even like, I think on the onboarding, I don't know what I can say about the onboarding process, but I feel like they definitely talk about imposter syndrome and they're like, hey, you know, you're joining this really large organization that's like, a leader in engineering. You're bound to like fear, deal with some imposter syndrome or be scared of something or like just feel like it might have been a mistake or these kind of feelings that people kind of go through. And they try to catch that early and they talk about it in the onboarding to kind of like make sure that whatever resource you need, they're providing for you. So it's not bad.
All right. That's amazing. And I remember something that you said when we were together, which was something like, nowadays, every startup is competing against a spreadsheet. And I thought this was really curious. And at the time, it didn't hit me as much as it hit afterwards. Afterwards, like, when people were talking about new ideas, I was like, man, that was so brilliant, because every time someone was presenting, I was seeing someone presenting a new idea, I was always like, yeah, if we break this down, this could actually be a spreadsheet. So this isn't improving upon a spreadsheet. And I thought that idea was brilliant. Like, can I get your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I didn't come up with that. I got it from somewhere else. I haven't heard it a lot often, but it is kind of like a thing you start realizing, like a lot of apps are really just competing against a spreadsheet, right? And especially now, there's this idea of like no code or like low-code. Like Google has like app sheets, Microsoft has Power Apps. Microsoft has Power Apps.
Oh, right.
Which is like a way of like building these apps or like iOS, Android apps, same thing with Google App Sheets. Through the UI and like just drag and drop kind of thing, right? And if you see those apps are literally just like, most of them, their selling point is like, we connect to Excel or we connect to Google Sheets and we can suck your data in and present it in like an app, right? And the thing is, a spreadsheet is really powerful, but the big thing that spreadsheet has over anything else is time, right? Most spreadsheets, like people have been using spreadsheets in business since, you know, I don't know, I don't want to pick a date, but I want to say the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, whenever computers were being used, spreadsheets were the first ones there, right? And they're just such a powerful tool with such a simple UI, and the learning curve is really low, right? It could also be really high for like the complex things, but it's really low to get started. So it's just hard to be like, how can someone that's been using spreadsheets for 30 years, how can this one app that does half of the things or like a quarter of the things really compete? So it's funny. I used to work at a startup, LearnVest, and it was a personal finance startup. And the biggest competitor for this app was Reddit, our personal finance, and spreadsheets, right? It was like people just want to know how to manage their finances and then a spreadsheet to like really track everything. And it's the same thing with like Mint and like all these finance stuff. It's like, it's really hard to compete with a spreadsheet. And I think the fact that you see Google, Microsoft, all these companies coming up with like these low-code, no-code platform really means there's still a market there. That there's still tons of apps that haven't been built that Excel is still beating them at, right? And it's like, it's going to be a while before we can essentially say, you know, there's an app for everything. Because right now there's an app for everything, but Excel is still the app for everything everywhere else. It's kind of, if you start thinking about it, it's kind of funny.
That's true. If Excel had payments, Excel had everything, right?
Yeah. <That's> like <true. laughs> it can process credit cards, but maybe it can, right? I'm sure you can sync it to like Square or something.
Yeah. Okay. And so talking about startups, what type of impact do you think startups have? They have currently, they've had before, and what type of impact do you think they will have in the future in the tech landscape? So do you think the future is startup, or do you think the future are going to be the big tech companies, or how do you think startup will fit in the tech landscape of the future?
No, yeah, I think that's a great question. startups aren't going nowhere, right? No matter how many startups, you know, big tech company buys, there's still going to be another one popping up everywhere. There's still so many markets that have like haven't been penetrated in like the tech space and startups. Like if you think about, you know, most of Asia, America, same thing with like the Caribbeans. There's a lot of markets still where, you know, the internet is not where it needs to be. There's just a lot of space, I'm saying, for startups to really take over in those markets where the big tech companies haven't quite been able to penetrate as much as they'll like. And I say that because I think a lot of it, you'll see a lot of that where it's like the investor capital and stuff like that, you see it kind of moving a lot to like Africa now and those kind of places because there's just a lot of users there, right? And there's still so many different use cases that haven't been tackled by, you know, the big tech companies. So there's still a lot of, innovations to happen. And hopefully, you know, startups will start filling that gap. And I see that a lot too with like my family in DR, where it's like, there's just so much need for so many different apps that they haven't quite figured out yet. So yeah, I think startups will be here for a long time. What the relationship will be with like big tech companies, I don't know. I'm not really good at like the business side of it, but we'll see. Yeah, they do have a bad answer, I feel.
Yeah, it was a great answer, but they do have the big advantage of speed, right? So they move a lot quicker than most big companies, right?
Yeah, not only speed, just like able to experiment, right? Like they're able to experiment, try things out and be like, oh, this isn't working. Like it's very easy to like spin up a small team and be like, oh, let's try to tackle this in this one part, in this one region. And they're able to experiment and be like, oh, this isn't working. Let's do this other thing. Or this isn't working either. Let's try this other thing. Whereas like for a big company, technically the capital is there, but it required like, they just don't have like foot on the ground, for example. Yeah.
Right, of course. And
but so I caveat that with, I don't know, I'm not really like a tech business person. So that might be a horrible answer. And and maybe, you know, maybe that, I don't know. We'll leave it at that.
But besides tech startups and tech companies, so in general, do you think that all companies are tech companies nowadays? Or do you think that companies that are not tech companies should become and will become tech companies?
No, yeah. Another great question. I think if you're not a tech company, you're in trouble, right? And it's because I think I'm really familiar with like Netflix coming in and like scaring the media companies, right? Because I was at NBC when Netflix was like, oh, not only are we putting movies on the internet, but we're also going to start producing our own movies. And that was something that like, it was, oh man, Netflix is now like a content producer, right? And the reason I say that is because all these traditional companies like media companies or finance company, they kind of missed the ball on like technology is just so much easier to access, right? That's one of the things Netflix did. Like it made it super easy for you to see almost anything you wanted to, right? And that's very powerful. And there's very few companies, actually, there's a lot of industries that haven't quite reached that point. I think what I'm seeing now is probably the insurance space. The insurance space, there's still not tech companies, but now there's a couple of startups that I'm starting to see that are coming out and like they're doing like AI first insurance, right? So there's still spaces where companies aren't tech companies. They're the traditional type of companies, but I don't think it'll be long before those companies start disappearing. Like if you're not tech first, the users just don't want to use it. Like I don't want to deal with an insurance company that doesn't have an app, right? I don't want to deal with someone where I'm going to have to call someone and like, and speak on the phone. That's not, I realize I'm not a perfect example because I'm so tech driven, but it is the majority of people, especially like younger people, right? They want to kind of
avoid human contact.
Yeah, avoid human contact, which is horrible, right? But it's true. It's like, you know, the selling point is like, you don't have to talk to anyone, right? CarMax or the car company is like, you know, we'll ship a car. Just download the app. We'll buy it. We'll ship it to you. Or like, we'll pick up your car if you sell it. That avoid human contact. And it's now more prevalent because of COVID. But that was always a like people were just like, I don't want to talk to people. Like, just give me an app. So yeah, if you're not a tech company right now, or you don't see yourself as a tech company, that's probably a problem for the future.
Do you think that when you say tech companies, do you feel that it's just around the web and web development, or do you think also like web, AI, and everything that's happening in the tech industry now? Or do you think that it's just like web focused, like everyone should be online, the rest, but everyone should be online and the rest kind of meh? Or do you think that everyone should really embark in the tech industry?
No, and that's a great question. I think the mistake a lot of companies make is they think, I just need a web presence, right? And that's really wrong, right? Because putting certain things on the web doesn't help if when I submit a form or a form online, someone still has to fill out the paperwork for my insurance, right? So it's not that those processes all need to be updated. And it's different when, like, let's say I submit a form and the AI says, this person can get this discount, and like you could get automatic and you're okay for like the automatic insurance approval really easy because you're like a really easy case. That's really where the benefits come in, right? Just putting yourself on the internet doesn't quite help anyone, right? And that's what you see where like companies tend to fail, where it's like, oh, I'm going to just make a web presence, but then you sign up a form and then you got to wait 3 days to hear back. It's like, oh, that's not helpful. Like, like you're not a tech company. You're just a website, right? So I think there's that difference there. And I think the companies are able to transition easy, or not easily, but more holistically, are the ones that can be like, hey, let's start from the beginning. Like, what part of our process really needs to be automated, needs to be online? Can we use AI? Can we use these kind of tools to like make it better for our users? And in those cases, I would imagine they would thrive on the internet.
Of course, that makes sense. So you are currently in the web development area, and you have been for a long time. But if you were starting your career right now, what area would you choose? Would it still be web development, software engineering, or would you go somewhere else?
You know, my answer, you had sent me this question, and I was going to say I'll probably do vulnerability research or hacker. But in reality, when I chose web development, I was already doing like cybersecurity. And I still went with web development just because of the jobs, right? There was just so many more jobs. So in retrospect, I probably would still look at the job and be like, actually, there's just so much more potential in web development or software engineering in general that I'll probably end up there. But I do think some of the markets that have really grown is, you know, AI is great, but it's still like a subset of engineering, right? And then cybersecurity, there wasn't as many jobs in cybersecurity when I was getting started, and there wasn't these like cybersecurity companies like they are now. So I will probably still end up somewhere around there. I've always enjoyed cybersecurity, but I don't know. Any of those markets, any of those fields is great. Cybersecurity, general engineering, definitely distributed systems, because that's just the way the internet is built. And one thing I'll say about that, the reason why the internet will always be like a safe place to work, it's because it's one of the few places that all the tech companies have like a stake in, right? Like Microsoft, Google, Apple, et cetera, or Opera, Firefox, they all have to support a web browser, right? And they're all in agreement of making that process better and like enhancing the web, where it's like, you know, every other platform, it's owned by one of these companies, and they're not in agreement on those platforms, right? But the web is the one thing where like they have to work together. So the web will continue to evolve, will continue to get better. So I'm perfectly happy, like just sticking with the web. Like, I know it very well. I'll keep growing with it, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
Nice. But I think the question that I must ask now is, are you going to switch to cybersecurity now that you are at Google and have some maneuverability space?
That's a good question. I never thought about it. Probably not. I still like, there's certain things I like doing on the side, but I don't know if I'll like as a day-to-day, like cybersecurity is hard.
That makes sense.
And like, I enjoy doing it. I like doing it. I still do like the Hacker Ones competitions. I've done a couple of those. So those are fun as like a, I'm gonna do a weekend cybersecurity, or I'm gonna learn how to like hack this thing. But every day,
but not.
I don't know.
Brain,
I don't know what that. Right. I don't know what that would feel like. Yeah.
Yeah, that
hasn't crossed my mind, but if it does, you'll be the reason why I switch jobs if I do.
Let me know then. Okay, yeah. So so let's wrap this up, and ask a future question. So, what do you think is going to be the future of software engineering?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think the easy answer is AI, right? I think it's just hard for it not to be AI. Or machine learning, whatever you want, more AI, right? Where it's like, I think about where
you mean AI research or AI products?
No, AI products. Right. And the reason for that is we're kind of just scratching the surface on that. And there's a lot of products out there, but they're not quite working in like an ideal way, right? Like there's still so much to go there. I think everyone's scared of like, you know, AI and the future of AI, but we still haven't figured out how to like get all these AI products to really communicate and like talk to each other and actually be smart. They're just like, currently they're just really good if statements, right? They're really good at deciding between a couple of things, but they're not really good at figuring out, you know, whether, I can't think of an example right now.
Right, but generalizing. Right.
Yeah. They're very good at those extreme specifics. So probably AI. That's also like, you know, AI machine learning is a great place to like get your career started right now. It's definitely not an easy place to break into.
That's true.
Yeah. Damn, I wish I had a better answer for like the last question.
No, that was great. Okay, I think this is it, man. Thank you so much for coming. It was such a pleasure to have you here and host you on the show. And thank you a lot for coming and for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful. Thanks.
You can find Eric on Instagram @ champagnecoder.